There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Dumber part two.
Oh, I hope you're hungry. I gotta find a sauce.
Welcome to the show, everyone. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel.
Hey, my name is Greco Romanto, and I teach you how to cook an Asian boy. And what you gotta do is 9 onions. You cut off the dick of the Asian boy, you put it in a pot, you get the onions, a simmer, and then, hey, guess what? You what? Sit down and you eat the penises.
So it's just it's mostly just Asian boy penis with onions.
Onions then. And penises.
That's it.
All you need.
No green peppers or bell peppers in there. No. Nothing like that.
Onions.
Salt and pepper?
No. No. Onions.
Just onions.
You get the sweet salty from the seminal crusted onto their pubic hair.
Sure. So you put the pubic hair in there.
No, you have to have the pubic hairs.
Oh, okay. And the balls or the balls in a different stew?
Oh, the balls are the best part.
Okay.
How they fall apart into strings. Manjo banjo.
The manjo banjo.
I've just been Greco Romanti here, the human chef.
Yes, I see. That's Henry Zabrowski, of course. It's part two of Dahmer.
I hope you guys are all sitting down with a big plate of spaghetti to ready to listen to this next episode.
So you remember, the first episode, we got really sad about Jeffrey Dahmer.
He had a rough childhood. His dad wasn't there and his mom didn't love him enough.
Yeah, and then this part reminds you that he's a fucking monster.
Monster. So then you're just like, I understand why his father left and I get why his mother thought he was a crazy person.
Can't handle this kid. He's got an attitude problem.
That's right.
You know, he's had a hard time making friends.
So
if you have a hard time making friends, you got to go make friends.
I will say his parents did not help him out. They created the creepy Dahmer house on the top of the hill.
They didn't create. Technically, he created that by what he did.
Well, the Dahmer house helped him with the visual. I know a lot of people. A creepy guy.
I have a lot of friends who live in setback, beautiful houses. It's great because it's isolated. It's not a sad graveyard because it's isolated. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
It can be a nice thing to get away from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That's true. Well, the Dahmer house had some vultures flying above it, and there's always a storm cloud there, and lightning was about to strike at any moment.
So we just left Dahmer just moving into his grandma's house, right?
Well, we left Dahmer. He had just moved to his grandma's house. He had just gotten his job at the Ambrosia Chocolate.
That's right.
Nothing like a fine Willy Wonka chocolate.
Mm-hmm. They have since torn down their old factory and built a new one.
It's bad for business when you have a bone eater in your business, huh?
But they still keep the name Ambrosia.
That's nice.
Well, you got to remember, that's the thing. Branding is so hard. When
it
you
is.
Got a name that already sticks, you got to keep it.
Well, it's been around since 1895.
Yeah, just one dude eating 16 Asian boys isn't going to keep
Absolutely.
The chocolate from rolling. The show's got to keep going.
There's some chubby dude looking similar to the villain from True Detective working at the Hershey Pennsylvania factory. There's
absolutely.
No doubt. They got blood on their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. You know how many Oompa Loompas fell into that chocolate river?
So many. And we laughed and we laughed. Oh, look at the little
how
Oompa
many
Loompas.
They had to get fished out of there, stuck in the drainage pipes, and nobody ever talked about it because Willy Wonka was made out of magic.
And he was offering a golden ticket to come and tour the death factory he called the chocolate factory.
So Jeffrey Dahmer
he was making bank, by the way, at Ambrosia. 19 bucks an hour.
$19 an hour in 2014 money.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
But Jeffrey Dahmer, just like John Wayne Gacy, again and again slipped through the cracks, again and again was arrested for certain sexual crimes. On September 8th, 1986, he was arrested for lewd and lascivious behavior for masturbating in front of a couple of 12-year-old boys on the banks of the Kinnickinnick River.
Because this is now, when did he kill his first victim again?
He killed his first victim at 18.
This was the hitchhiker.
Yes. The first victim that he killed, I believe it was something like 9 years before, right?
Yeah, this was he had been going through a huge cooling off.
So he's in his mid-20s here?
So what I was listening in Born to Kill, they said the thing that he says set him back off, like when he was staying with his grandma. So basically, when he was staying with his grandma, he was trying to get back into religion really heavily.
Yeah. Then
so
she started walking around to the house in those big white panties.
He's just like, sashaying around.
You'll think about that.
But apparently he was at a library reading, because he took up his time reading, and a man walked past him and threw up a crumpled pieces of paper at him, and he opened it up and it said, if you want a blowjob, meet me in the bathroom. And he said he didn't go and meet the guy, but he was like, it was the first thing that made his brain kick back into being the Jeff we know and love.
That's right. Oh, man, that's got to be fun, though, at the same time.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I wish somebody, most preferably a woman, and an attractive one, throws me a crumpled up piece of paper. Like, do you want a blowjob?
It sounds like a penthouse letter.
It
but
does. It
when
does.
You're Jeffrey Dahmer, everything gets sour.
And isn't it interesting to know what the world was like before Grindr? Just crushed up pieces of paper being thrown on random people studying at the library.
Yeah, so then he started jerking off in public.
Yeah, he started jerking off in public. He jerked off in front of these two 12-year-old boys. They just laughed at him.
Which is so sad.
Oh, so sad.
Oh, I mean, at the very least, you want them to look scared.
Or, yeah. Like, well, one of them asked him, like, you having a good time? And he goes, yeah, I'm having a great time.
Yeah, of course he is. He's fully hard.
Right.
Yeah, if he was having a hard time, he'd just be like, you know, he'd be soft going, like, I can't.
No,
he
you
was
guys are
ready to go.
Yeah.
But now, this was what was so interesting with that. He doesn't like alive people. And he doesn't really enjoy young boys.
This is about
se,
deviancy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and being drunk all the time.
So he's loaded off a Schlitz.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Every moment of his life.
Yeah.
So he confessed to police when he was arrested that he had masturbated 5 times in public in the preceding months. And this
just
also...
Like, you just can't let all the beans spill. I'll say this to anybody. If you're talking to the police, if you got secrets, just take a breath. Mm-hmm. Before you start spouting off your secrets. You
well, this was part of Dahmer's game. This is because this is not going to be his last arrest. This was part of his game. He was very charismatic when he was arrested by the police. He was always very apologetic, very sorry. The report said that he doesn't know what changed him to make him suddenly start doing this, but that he knows he has a problem and he wants to get help. And that was his thing over and over. I want to get help. I don't know why I do these things. He was sentenced to a year's probation and some therapy
for like
this crime.
10 therapy sessions with probably some like student psychologist, and they're like, so what do you dream about? And he's like, well, sometimes I go and I dream about this. A boy is just nothing but muscles, and he comes to me and he says he wants to be my ultimate wife, and then I come all over him, and they're just like, time's up. Thank you so much for coming in.
Wait, I think I'm going to really ace this paper. I think I got a real sociopath here.
So this is at the time, as Henry said, he got the note in the library, and he also briefly after this, like, God didn't work, so he figured he'd try Satan. He got into occult practice.
Hell yeah.
Right.
For just a little bit. When Satan didn't work, he figured, all right, it's time to just dive head first into the Milwaukee gay scene.
And it makes me so sad that Satan didn't work for him, because he's worked for so many people. He's made the rest of us so cool.
Well, that's very, very debatable. God and Satan couldn't beat Dahmer, though.
They really couldn't.
That's why he's number one in my book. Can't get him down. He's king of kings, lord of lords, Jeffrey Dahmer.
So Dahmer, he started going to gay bars all around Milwaukee. He was known as that guy, the loner, the guy that just would sit at the bar and would just get wasted.
Like the cool loner, like Antonio Banderas and Desperado loner.
I think he saw himself as that, and then everyone else is like, this is a man who doesn't wash his clothes, who keeps going up to people and tell them how much he likes how their hips look, and he wishes that he could have them as a trophy.
Oh.
That's what's horrible. Right. It sounds like it's flirting at first.
Right, that's what they're thinking, but he just keeps on twirling it. His hair.
There was a great bartender did an interview on, again, my favorite serial killer series, Born to Kill, on Jeffrey Dahmer, and he was just like, Jeffrey used to come in every day, and he'd get the same beer, and then he'd sit in a corner like he was waiting for somebody, but then I guess he found him every once in a while.
That's it.
Well, where Jeffrey first started getting his drug him and fuck him on was at this place called Club Baths in Milwaukee, which was closed by health authorities in 1988.
No way! the Club Bath in Milwaukee was filthy? I can't believe it.
Oh,
well, we got the cheese sauna, or we also have the spaghetti and meatball pit.
And we're doing a bit of Brett Boyle in the Egyptian theme room.
Yeah. That's all the steam from the brats, you know?
Well, if you don't know how a gay bathhouse works... Essentially, the men go in wearing towels, and they just kind of walk around. They point to each other, and they say, like, hey, how'd you like to go to a private room? They go back to the private room.
It's so easy.
And they fuck. That's so easy
and crazy. And yeah, he said here that he described it as a relaxing place.
Relaxing. Doesn't sound relaxing. It truly sounds like hell on earth. And it's just so funny. If you hear about like a San Francisco gay bath club, you're thinking svelte bodies, you know, beautiful nipples.
This is Milwaukee secret gay.
This is underground. This is Da Bear's guys from SNL all in a dark cave trying to pretend like they're not gay and don't want to fuck each other.
So Jeffrey, after he started fucking guys on the regular in this bathhouse, he hated the fact that his partners would move during sex.
It's always a problem.
He hated it.
Yes. And so he should have just gotten with a beautiful cheerleader. They don't move at all during sex.
Supermodel.
Yeah, exactly.
So he said that he's trained himself to view people as objects of pleasure instead of actual human beings.
And the guy who was the head investigator, what's his name again?
Patrick Kennedy,
who was great, had the amazing interview on the Jeffrey Dahmer Files documentary,
so good.
If you've seen it. He's like, you know, for the life of me, I don't understand why he had to kill these people. From what I heard, and it sounded like, is that this guy was getting laid back and forth. He's getting laid all the time. Because it's true. Apparently, he was having a lot of sex, but he wasn't getting his itch scratched.
Well, you won't get too much into Patrick Kennedy, but YouTube him and just Wikipedia him. His life story alone is almost worth an episode.
Yeah.
Because he became a secondhand celebrity from Dahmer and left his wife and started banging a bunch of chicks at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
He had every policeman's dream happen to him, that you bust the big killer and then you become like...
He was a raging alcoholic. He celebrated his birthday, he said, with the telephone was out in his house. He only had one channel on the TV and a bottle of whiskey. And he was celebrating like his 50th
birthday.
That's what
I did.
But it's different, Henry.
but he was also saying, he's like, well, you know, I was in my apartment and, you know, I had a bottle of whiskey and no channels on the TV. He wasn't sad about it.
No, I mean, he's been Western. We're not a grizzled people. We're not Pacino, you know?
So in 1986, around June, this is when he came upon the first step of what would lead to cannibalism, essentially. This is when he started giving his partner sleeping pills.
Because you see a lot of times, I think this happens a lot with serial killers too, is they give themselves little permissions.
Yeah. Sure.
Where they're like, I'm going to ease my way into my fantasy, making my fantasy real. Because he already did, technically. Because he had that, he had the hitchhiker just show up. And so he did that and it happened to him. Now he's starting to realize, like, I can make him go to sleep a little bit. I can do this. I can just beat him a little bit.
I mean, it is similar to any addiction cycle with alcohol. I can have a shot. It's my birthday. I'm okay with that. And the next thing you know, you're fucking, you know, slamming down bottles of Jim Beam and you're in Mexico hanging out with Kenny Powers. You know, it just gets wilder and wilder.
So it took Dahmer, it took him doing this 12 times to get his membership revoked from the bathhouse.
He was doing this in public.
He was doing this in the bathhouse. He was taking his drugs to the bathhouse, and he would say, like, hey, you want a drink? And he'd put the sleeping pills in the bathhouse. There was one instance where a kid almost died because he gave him too much.
You know, it does seem like, not that it's okay, but it does seem like this is a common thing.
It is a common thing.
Well, this is a date rape drug for all intents and purposes.
And at this time, there were never any criminal charges pressed because it's 1986 in Milwaukee. No one is going to say they're gay.
No.
This is the bizarre homophobia effect. Like, you talk about with, like, black prostitutes and things like that, how the cops just kind of left them alone. It's a lesser than, you know, they just don't want to deal with it at all. No one wanted to acknowledge that gay people existed.
Absolutely not. That's where the gay, same thing with the Gacy thing happened for the same reason, because of you had to keep these secrets. And then again, in the Satanism and the government thing, it creates a network of secrets. Everyone has to keep your secret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Dahmer, after he has his bathhouse membership revoked, that's when he starts taking people back to either hotel rooms or to his basement in his grandma's house.
Can you imagine going to some guy's grandma's house's basement to have sex with him?
An adult, a mid-20-year-old man. I want to know how he got his license revoked. I just feel like he was like a big fat, like, John Hughes 80s, like a woman who used to, like, the woman who worked at the airport in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You're fucked. You know, just be like, you're revoked. Get out of here, Jeffrey.
I was just doing what everybody else was doing.
And this is also the time when he's, you know, he's really trying to get his shit under control. This is when he stole the mannequin from the store.
Mm. Which is a nice compromise. I wouldn't be surprised if nowadays they do have all those life-size dummies that are meant for sex. I wonder if that would have alleviated at least a couple of these murders.
We were talking about on this. Were we talking about this podcast, or were we maybe talking about in the live show about there's a problem with live dolls about being returned all fucking cut up.
Oh,
The people return. Basically, they get them and they slice open their fucking bellies like they're looking for some organs,
right?
And then they fucking send them back, being like, "This one didn't have any organs.
Yeah, this one's like, broken."
So
That's a bad day on the job.
Can you imagine that your job is to accept returns at the live doll
from
factory?
Human sex dummies?
Oh my.
Well, Grandma made Jeffrey return his sex doll.
Well, yeah, because,
she found it and she made him throw it out.
I love it. He's sort of living like, Maximilian from Confederacy of Dunces?
Yeah.
is it Max?
No, it's, Ignatius,
yeah. You don't understand me, Grandma.
Get out of here, Grandma.
Why, this mannequin is among the most boisterous things I've ever had the pleasure of owning in my life.
Can you imagine Grandma finding his semen-encrusted fucking mannequin torso? Oh. You know that he'd put like a wig on it something. Like,
probably
to make
a knife through its chest.
And she's just like, Jeffrey, leaving his toys around.
She's a 60, 70-year-old grandma from the Midwest. She has no idea what could possibly be happening to that mannequin.
No, she doesn't. And you know who else didn't have any idea what was going to happen to him? Stephen Tuomi.
Yeah, Stephen Tuomi got the surprise of his life.
and the surprise of his death. Am I right?
No, you are. Yeah.
Thank you, Marcus. Yeah. Thank you, Henry.
It was in November of 1987. Stephen Tuomi, 25 years old. He got picked up at Club 219, which was to become one of Dahmer's three favorite pickup spots. He was from Ontonagon. Is that correct, Ben?
I don't know. You pronounced it so bad that I have no idea what that would be.
Ontonagon.
Ontonagon, okay.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Antonagon.
That sounds right. Yeah, Antonagon. Yeah.
So they both went to the Ambassador Hotel, which...
Classy.
It is classy.
Yep, it was a heroin hotel.
Oh, a seedy rooming house.
Yes, yes. And so they got wasted, they passed out, and when Dahmer woke up, Tuomi was dead, blood was pouring from his mouth, and his chest was completely crushed in.
Now, this is
where
also
Dahmer had beat him to death with
his fist. But Dahmer doesn't remember doing any of it.
He said he did it
none of it.
In a full blackout state, and he said he woke up, he was surprised that he had done it, that he had not prepared for it. And again, this shows the tremendous physical strength that Jeffrey Dahmer had.
Because his parents put him in martial arts and weightlifting school, which is insane.
So Dahmer, he bought a suitcase from the nearby Grand Avenue Mall, which is also coincidentally, he picked up a lot of his later victims at Grand Avenue Mall. He put the corpse inside, called a cab. He took the corpse to Grandma's house, unpacked it, masturbated on it.
Have you heard the story, too, is that when the cab driver picked him up, this is totally true, cab driver picked him up, was lifting the bag into the back of the cab, and he's like, "Hey, buddy, what do you got in here, buddy?" And Jeffrey Dahmer was like, "Yeah, I do." And they were like,
I'm telling you, the sense of humor in the Midwest could be too good sometimes.
Because, because he probably had a long, full, just like a, yeah, it's in there.
Yep.
You got to open it up and take a look at it.
We'll just put it in the trunk. Oh, these guys.
So the next morning, Jeffrey takes Tuomi's body. He severs the head, the arms, the legs, the torsos, fillets the bones from the body, cuts the flesh into tiny little pieces, puts the flesh in plastic garbage bags, puts it outside with the rest of the trash. He smashes up all the bones with a sledgehammer. Took him about 2 hours.
Which is pretty quick. I mean, he's a pro.
Well, this is also him out of sheer desperation.
Right.
He did not expect to kill this person. He didn't think he was going to. But, of course, again, permissions. You kind of build yourself up to it. You kind of put yourself in the scenario where it'll happen. And then you'll be surprised at what happens, of course.
Right.
But he was just trying to get rid of the evidence.
Well, not completely, because
God, man,
he
I just
did.
Pictured him listening to Sunday Morning Coming Down, just drinking a beer on the bed, just sitting there with the corpse. Just
Sunday morning.
Man, weird.
Well, he wasn't trying to get rid of the body too much, because this was his second kill. Was also his first attempt at retaining a trophy. He kept the head in a wrapped up in a towel for about 2 weeks. And then he tried to, he boiled the head in a mixture of a cleaning liquid called Soilex.
I've never heard of Soilex.
I've never heard of Soilex either.
It sounds like it's a thing you specifically use to melt flesh off of your body.
And that became Soilex. He did use that throughout his career. It was Soilex and bleach.
Hey there, Steve, you want me to boil you to get the skin off your face? Oh, yeah, Jeffrey, yeah.
They always say yes.
Get the Soilex, Jeffrey.
You are funny, Steve.
Yeah, that scenario comes up later. But unfortunately, he boiled it in Soilex and bleach, and it rendered the skull very brittle, and it wasn't, he couldn't really use it. He was using it to masturbate with, but it was falling apart.
He overcooked it.
He overcooked it, yeah.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah. It's just the stories of a beginning chef. When I was first teaching myself to cook, I burned things all the time, but now you just get into a groove.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing, or not the funny thing, but he, okay, yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. He was never charged with this murder because they were never able to find a body. Investigators, they even considered charging him with failure to report a death.
Right. Jesus
which
Christ.
In Wisconsin is a Class B misdemeanor. A fine not to exceed $1,000 or imprisonment not to exceed 90 days.
Oh, well, he could have gotten off easy then.
The 80s were different. The 80s were just a different time.
Yeah. And this is, I think this is a very interesting thing because this is Dahmer's first kill after 9 years. And he says that he blacked out, and the Dean of College of Criminal Justice at Northeastern
gave him double secret probation.
Ooh, well, you can't kill a horse in the goddamn guy's office, you know? That's an Animal House reference.
His name's James Allen Fox. He had something fairly interesting to say. He said maybe his victim said something to him that made him block out what happened. Even to a serial killer, some things may be too traumatic to remember.
It was the 50 Schlitz. It was the 50 Schlitz, the pills he was taking, and the whiskey.
Hey there, buddy. You ain't gonna make me into a human lamp, are ya?
Yeah. No, just a porridge.
So after this is when the killing truly begins.
This is, again, this is him going into full berserker mode for the first time.
Yeah.
He'll do it 2 times in his career. And this is him just, school's out for the summer for Mr. Dahmer.
He's having fun now.
Yep. 2 months later, he met 14-year-old Jamie Doxtater outside of Club 19. Jamie was a young kid who used to just cruise outside of the bar.
At 14?
At 14. This happens again and again.
Man, we made movies with my friends in the park at 14. Well, I kissed a girl and it was just like, I listened to Hanging by the Moment.
Yeah.
You know that song over
Oh, but
over
Lighthouse
again?
Or something like that?
My home
No. I think you guys have sung that before. If there's a fan out there listening, listen to them. Whatever. I don't want to think about it.
The song of summer was Drops of Jupiter?
Oh, terrible stuff.
That's when I was 14.
But this is 80, what is this, 87 now?
87, yeah.
So he's listening to Twisted Sister and Motley Crue, some Guns N' Roses, some real good shit.
Yeah. So Jamie, he, just like a lot of other Jeffrey's other victims, he was had a long criminal history.
Yeah, he was like a cool little kid.
He's 14.
He's a car thief and a hustler.
Yeah.
Dahmer said that he thought that Jamie was Hispanic, about 18 years old. And this is another weird thing about Dahmer, is that he will admit to killing and eating and butchering and all that.
Right.
But all of his underage victims, he always maintains, I thought they were 18.
Well, because he didn't actually want to have sex with kids. It was just the hairless torsos he was after.
Yeah.
You know, and who can blame him?
I mean, the penal system.
I like a good hairless torso as well. I mean, I enjoy full adult females.
Yes.
And that's where you could get that.
They tend to be hairless.
You could also have a man shave. There are ways to do it.
Totally.
You could just say to someone, hey, I like a shaved chest. And like, oh, you should meet Shaved Chest Bernie over there in the go-go cage. He doesn't have hair on his chest. You don't have to find a boy.
Dahmer wasn't much of a talker, though, you know?
He really wasn't. What he was good at, though, was offering to take people back to his apartment to pose for pictures.
Oh, so yeah, but he loved that he was Hispanic, but he turned out to be all Native American.
Yes, he turned out to be half Stockbridge, half Onita.
Which is why many of our famous Native American characters and movies were played by Spanish people for a very long time. Easily discernible.
Yeah, Spanish people or Johnny Depp.
Very confusing.
But now, so he's out of grandmother's house.
No, he's still in grandmother's house.
Still in grandmother's house.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's still in grandmother's house. He takes Jamie back, takes some pictures, gives him the drink with the drugs mixed in. Jamie falls asleep. Jeffrey strangles him to death. And that's Jeffrey's MO right there. Yeah. Take him back to the apartment. Give him the drugs. They pass out, strangle him to death. Well, there are very few instances where that doesn't happen.
It's a more humane death than what the Oklahoma gave that dude on death row with the triple cocktail there. You know, pass somebody out and strangle him to death. It's not the worst way to go.
Do we want to play the sound clip of when Jeff realized like what his life rhythm was?
Oh yeah, this is Mr. Kennedy talking about Jeffrey's, I guess,
perfect recipe.
His perfect his process.
He would lay listening to their heart, and he trained himself to learn when they were coming out of the drug-induced coma by their breathing, because it would start to get kind of sharp and short from the long breathing of a drug-induced. And that's when he knew it was time to kill them.
And that's what he said. And that's why he'd strangle him, because that was the least painful way to kill him.
Yeah. And if you remember, this goes back to when he was a kid. If you remember from the first episode, he used to do the same thing to his childhood friends.
Yes.
He would sit there and he would listen to their chest, to listen to their heartbeat.
Right.
I mean, this was something that had gone back a long time.
And again, if it wasn't such a perverted brain, he would have been a pediatrician. He would have been a doctor.
Or at least, you know, have the friendly hobby of being a taxidermist.
Yeah. Sure.
But then he also did the same thing. This, we're just watching him play out his childhood games in the adult world.
Yeah.
Right. So like how like Michael Jordan used to play basketball when he was in middle school. He says, yes, one day I'm going to make it to the pros and
like
win all the championships.
Just like that, yes.
So now he's starting to win some championships.
Because he was just wants to see some bones. He wants to get that ring of seeing how many times he could look at a liver.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure who's crazier, Dahmer or Michael Jordan. They're both sociopaths.
When I want to see bones, I go to the Natural History Museum.
Yeah, or you just go back to Texas.
Or my backyard.
Yeah.
So he dismembered the body with a knife by the backroom drain, broke up the bodies with bones with a sledgehammer, put them in a plastic bag, blah, blah, blah. He didn't remember the face, Jamie's face, when cops showed him a mugshot. He didn't remember the face, but the odd detail that he did remember, he remembered that the boy had two scars close to his nipples that were about the circumference of a cigarette. Real odd.
Oh, the kid was probably abused by his uncle or something at a young age and had cigarette burns there. I just like how perverted Jeffrey Dahmer is, that you just blah, blah, blahed over him cutting up a corpse and putting it into a plastic bag.
It happened 16 times.
Yeah. I'm just saying, usually blah, blah, blah over a bad conversation that occurred. But
yeah, so 2 months later, Dahmer meets Richard Guerrero. The process is identical except for one very important escalation. This is the first time that he actually has sex with the dead body.
Ooh.
Yeah. And this is where we're discovering his favorite flavor, which is that. But then I also love that the parents of Richard Guerrero is like, our son isn't gay.
Yeah.
Our son's not gay. It came out, they said that he was just like, the only way that I think Dahmer could have got him was by luring him with money or a party, which kind of makes him sound gay.
Yeah.
Makes him sound really gay.
Saw a movie called Party Monster. That's exactly what happened to the person who got killed in that movie.
So the family, they spent thousands upon thousands of dollars on a private investigator. This is sad. The private investigator, they found out that the guy never even worked on the case. And when they asked him, was like, what happened to him? He goes, maybe a drug deal gone bad? I don't know.
This would have been the greatest case of all time for a private investigator.
No work was done.
None.
No work was
no
done.
Work.
Just nobody tried to save these people.
Yeah, and none of this. And you'll also see this time and again is that the cops, nobody paid attention to the Guerreros. They try going to the press. They try going to the cops. Nobody gave them any attention. But when Richard Guerrero was positively identified as one of Dahmer's victims, these people didn't know a moment's peace for months. The press was camped out on their lawn. And this happened with almost every single one of his victims.
Of course, because it was this crazy sensational serial killer case. He's like the most infamous serial killer of all time. It's just a problem. It's a problem. The fact they were not investigated because of homophobia.
Yeah, because of homophobia, and also, well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, and there was nothing going on in Wisconsin at the time.
No.
I mean, this was I think the Green Bay Packers hadn't won a game in about a decade and a half. The Milwaukee Bucks are terrible. And that was that's all you have.
So just because the sports were gone.
But that was it. That's the only thing.
I don't know. I think it's valid. So by summer of 88, Grandma decides she's had enough of Jeffrey's antics.
Yeah, all the moaning and the screaming and him probably yelling to himself, hammered, bags and bags of Schlitz cans.
Yeah.
Just like going out. Him probably asleep on the stoops going like, Grandma, they keep coming to me to die.
Mm.
You know? She's just like, I've had it. I want to be young again.
Yeah.
And not just bags and bags of Schlitz cans, but bags and bags of garbage cans with a black substance oozing from them. Jeffrey or Catherine... Right. Catherine noticed there was some black bags, garbage bags out in front of her house that had a black substance oozing from them. She didn't want to confront Jeffrey with it, so she asked Lionel, you need to talk to your son about this black oozing substance.
And that ooze went on to create the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, wasn't that something?
Yes.
And Jeffrey said that he was just back up to his old tricks, that he was just removing the skin from animals he'd found with chemicals.
Totally normal for a 29-year-old man to be doing.
Oh, absolutely. I cannot believe the courage, the audacity of this guy to just put it out for garbage men to find.
It worked. It worked
nuts.
Again and again.
These are the best garbage. If you're ever worried that garbage men are stealing from your trash, they're not.
When we talk about
this, put a body in there and
Richard
find out.
Richard Ramirez felt the same thing. He felt like he was at a certain point. He felt like nobody could catch him.
Yeah.
He felt like, now I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing with my life, so now I'm protected by some other energy.
Right.
We see that, we'll see that later on where Jeffrey's fucking, his psychosis took him into a sort of a magical land.
Yeah, even more than Ramirez, Gacy was just toying with the cops. Never thought he was
because he was bigger than the police. He had connections to the mafia.
Yeah.
To the governor's office. To everyone. So on September 25th, 1988, Jeffrey moves out of Grandma's basement to North 24th Street in Milwaukee. What did I say?
Milwaukee.
I think it's just an accent thing.
God damn it.
Milwaukee sounds like it's somewhere in Australia or something.
So he moved to this place. He stayed there less than a month before he decided that he was going to pick up a 13-year-old Laotian boy from school one day. This little boy.
Well, they're just sashaying around asking for it, all these Laotians. I don't know how you pronounce that. It's Laotian?
Laotian. Yeah.
He didn't deserve it. What am I saying? He didn't technically
deserve it. Yeah, he's a 13-year-old.
He's a 13-year-old boy. So Jeffrey, he walked up to him. He said, hey, I want to try out my new camera. Do you want to help me try out my new camera? He said, I've asked all these other kids, and they've all said no.
Well, you never know when it's the guy from American Apparel, and you're going to be on the cover.
I don't know if it's because I'm 6'3", reeking of booze, and my eyes are all glazed over, and my clothes stink, but they all keep just saying no to me, Laotian boy.
So Jeffrey offered him $50, took the boy inside, took a couple of Polaroids, kissed the kid's stomach, took his dick out of his pants, touched it, and said, look sexier. And the whole time, this kid was drinking.
He's like, what's his name? Terry Richards.
Terry Richardson. He's a lot like Terry Richardson, actually. So this kid, the whole time he was drinking Bailey's and coffee, which is a pretty adult drink for a 13-year-old.
Yeah, is he reading, Tolstoy?
What happened to you?
Oh, never mind.
Tolstoy?
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 All right. Sit down.
No, the boy is drinking an interesting adult substance. Very good.
No worries, I'm Tolstoy.
All right. I had a lump. All right. I have cancer.
Yeah. So the Bailey's and coffee, that was, of course, mixed with Halcyon.
Yeah.
Which Halcyon is a cousin of Valium.
Sounds relaxing.
It does.
Yeah, I'm sure it was very relaxing. But however, Jeffrey did let the boy go. He went home. And of course, the family noticed that something was up when the kid kept bumping into walls and couldn't really speak. They took him to a hospital.
His stick was out.
I'm sure Jeffrey tucked that one back in. No, wait.
We'll save that for later.
Before you leave. So they took him to the ER. They confirmed that there was drugs in his system. The boy said that he'd gone with a sandy-haired, soft-spoken man.
Okay.
They were able to narrow down in the neighborhood because Jeffrey was a registered sex offender at this time. So they were able to...
And also working for the chocolate factory.
Which is where they arrested him.
Which is like being random special ops guy who's back home starts working for a bullet factory.
Yeah.
They arrested him at 2:30 a.m. The next day. When they asked him, like, listen, didn't you know he was underage? Jeffrey's response was, you know, it's so hard to tell.
Wasn't he outside of a middle school when he
fell? Yeah, yeah, he was a freshman in high school.
Yeah, you tend to know if people are Catholic, if they're coming out of a Catholic church, or, you know, underage if they're coming out of a middle school.
It's like he was looking for little boys.
Yeah, it was almost like he was hunting them.
So about the drugs, Jeffrey said that, hey, listen, that's the coffee cup that I used to drink my Bailey's and coffee and Valium. So there was probably some residue left in there.
Which just seems like a whole weird combo to say, oh, you know, every morning I love to have my, I have about an inch of Bailey's, a splash of coffee, and then I toss a couple of Halcyon in there just so I'm good enough to fly the plane later on.
Well, you are working at the world's slowest chocolate factory, Ambrosia, so yeah, I understand.
I think his boss, if he had heard that news, he'd been like, oh, yeah, we're all on Halcyon.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want none of that Lucille Ball stuff going on where the chocolate's coming too fast. You can't handle it, you know?
So Jeffrey, he pleads guilty. He is charged with sexual exploitation of a child, second-degree sexual assault. But while awaiting sentencing, that's when murder number 5 comes.
So he is ballsy as hell at this point.
Well, he's just hammered.
Yeah.
Again, right. He's just like, I feel like the confidence you saw in a Bundy or Ramirez is replaced by the fact that this man gets blind drunk, and that's technically when he's at his best.
Yeah.
That, like, that's when he's at his most forward. Like, he's making moves. He feels like he's Michael Jackson in that, like, video where he's got the white shirt and the black pants. He does the moonwalk for the first time.
Mm-hmm. You know, so black like, and he, white or something.
Yeah,
like that.
He feels like he's. Like,
and I would have loved to see him.
But every time he walks in, going like, hey, hey, you know, to everybody he meets.
Yeah, I would have loved to see him, like, when he does start dancing at these clubs, like 219 or whatever, when he just kind of walks backwards. Look at my moonwalk. I am moonwalking.
Look at me, moonwalk!
Like, you're just walking backwards, and there's a wall right, and...
Yeah, I like your moves. You want to come back with me to my place?
Oh, well, I won't be killing you tonight. Yeah, you're lucky.
That's how he hits up people. Yeah. Just like, hey, you're lucky I'm not asking you on a date. I'll see you later, buddy.
So he takes Anthony Spears, who he meets at La Cage aux Folies.
Which is, the La Cage aux Folies is the gayest name you can call a place. So if you're trying to hide, that's not the way to do it.
You
call it like Mansburg. That's what you call it. The big old manly bar.
That's right.
Steel Town.
Ooh, yeah. I want to go there. It sounds like a tough sports bar.
Anthony was Jeffrey's first victim of African American origin.
He's a very diverse killer.
All the rest of his murders would all be black.
Because we find out because they have the hairless chest that he searches for the most part.
The neighborhood that he lived in now. So
yeah. So he was this guy, Anthony Sears. Jeffrey told him that he was from Chicago. He was visiting his grandmother. Anthony told him that he was an aspiring model. Which, by the way, the Milwaukee gay scene, as we will see, is full of aspiring models.
Chock full of aspiring models.
Unfortunately, Milwaukee isn't chock full of a modeling industry. So that doesn't really help.
Which is why Jeffrey's like, this is the first step of my big break.
Yeah. Come to my place. I'll take some pictures of you. Absolutely.
So I'll bring my fireman's costume. I have a fireman's costume, a doctor's costume, an EMT costume, and a farmer's costume so we can get my composite going.
So they went back to his house. Jeffy strangled him, had sex with the corpse. Dismembered the body, and this skull would be the first skull that he would keep. He boiled the skull, just boiled it in water, which is the best thing
he learned.
You don't boil it with caustic chemicals.
Come on, Jeffrey.
So he boiled it, he painted it gray, and this is something that he would do with all of his skulls. He painted it gray so in case he was caught, he could tell the cops that it was a plastic model.
You can also imagine him going like, painting, oh. Is it the right kind of gray? Let me get some more black.
It's just Pinball Wizard is playing, but just on like skip. Like the song's just skipping in the background.
So he preserved the head and the genitalia of Spears in acetone. And this is ballsy as shit. He stored the head and genitalia of his victim in his work locker. Because he was still living at grandma's house at this time.
Well, I'm sure
he was at grandma's house here still?
He was still in grandma's house, yeah.
I feel like at this point, well, at this chocolate factory, the boss learned a long time ago, don't look in the lockers, because right. The stuff you find in a chocolate worker's locker is not, it's not Santa's workshop.
Right.
So he eventually confessed that this skull would be the centerpiece of the altar that he would masturbate in front of for years to come.
Now, this is when he really got kind of crazy.
Well, this is how you become a pope. This is exactly what they do.
Well, the altar, this skull was, I mean, this murder happened long before he had enough bones and heads and flesh to actually build the altar.
He's looking still forward to the, this is just the base area. He had an idea, came to his head, you know, it's like how we wanted to be comedians. It's just like, I could be a comedian. And he's just like, you know what I'm going to do one day? I'm going to make a big jerk off bone altar.
Ooh.
Well, how does that sit me? Well, I'm going to write it down and I'm going to keep it in my wallet. And if I'm still thinking about it a year from now, I'll do it.
So the altar was the most grotesque thing that I've ever read about.
Oh. Yes.
This was his crowning achievement at the end of his murders. The altar was 7 skulls, 2 entire skeletons. He had a black table that he had put all of these on. It was covered in photographs of all of his victims.
Real Etsy like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like that Kevin Costner movie. Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. But like, he was just wanting a Marilyn Manson concert.
If he built it, he would come.
Yeah, that's if I build it, I will come. Yeah, that's true. I just want to see Kevin Costner beating off on the pitcher's mound.
No. This is about old timey baseball.
No, not for me. It wasn't. This is my field of dreams. Field of creams.
Wish that I had not come to this old baseball field. I'm Shoeless Jackson.
Coming all over, baby.
I should have worn some shoes if I knew that Kevin Costner would be jerking off all over my feet.
Yeah. Trickery, motherfucker.
So the incense sticks were also placed on each end of the black table.
I was
thinking
that this whole time, great incense.
Yeah.
Little holders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The best incense holders. Yeah. The entire construction was to be placed before a window covered with a black opaque shower curtain, in front of which Jeffrey, he didn't get to this part. He intended to buy a really nice black leather chair.
Really nice chair.
Really?
Yeah. So what are you shopping for today at Sealy's, sir?
I'm just kind of looking for a nice, relaxing chair that I could put in front of my bone altar that I could jerk off all over the bones.
Well, we're going to need to get you one of these Petersons over
now,
here.
Now, this one kicks back.
Silver riveting. You've got a deep pocket bucket seat.
Do you like to drink beer? Do you like to drink a little bit?
Oh, I've got to drink beer. I'd be killing you right now.
Why don't you push that button right there on the left?
Oh, it's a beer fridge.
It's a beer fridge.
I can't believe I found something that works so perfectly.
Yep.
Hey, you want to come by my place?
We've got a couple of delivery guys coming. Make them hairless.
When they asked him who this altar was dedicated to, he said, myself. It was a place where I could feel at home.
Believe me, I understand.
Yeah,
we all get a new couch. We just ordered a new couch. Yeah, I can't wait for my new couch to come. I'm going to feel like I'm at home.
I'm with him on that. A nice couch really does make you feel like you own the place.
Yeah.
So sentencing comes along for the sexual assault charge, and this is another example of him slipping through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
D.A. Gail Shelton, based on a report of findings from Dahmer's past, she argued for a sentence of 5 to 6 years minimum. She said,
I think we should put him in one of those mirror prisons like General Zod in Superman 2.
She said, in my judgment, it is absolutely crystal clear that the prognosis for treatment of Mr. Dahmer within the community is extremely bleak, and the reality is that treatment within the community is just plain not going to work. His track record exhibits that he is very likely to reoffend. Mr. Dahmer's perception that what he did wrong here was choosing choosing too young a victim, and that's all he did wrong, is part of the problem. Three different mental health professionals said that he was angry, resistant, evasive, manipulative.
Yeah.
One doctor said that he had schizoid personality, recommended intensive treatment, hospitalization. Another one said that Jeffrey had problems with his sexuality.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe there's some problems. Described Dahmer as very alone in the world and as having a monastic and Spartan lifestyle.
That's what his attorney said.
He was very semi-sick. Yeah. I say semi because he hasn't manifested the sickness.
That this was his attorney's defense.
I don't think that that's the best way. So it's like, well, let's just think about it. He's not completely sick because he doesn't have like a chain of ears. Do you? Do you, Jeff? You don't have one, right? He doesn't have a chain of ears.
No, not yet.
He argued his lawyer's name.
Is three ears connected together a chain?
No, we need at least seven during.
All right, no, I do not. So, no, I do not.
It's more
I
of a keychain. It's a keychain of ears. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, that's semi crazy.
So, his attorney Gerald Boyle, he said that just the mere act of Jeffrey getting caught was enough to keep him from escalating. He said, having had a lot of contact with this man since I was hired to represent him,
like 6 months,
that there has been no recurrence of this type of conduct.
Killed two people.
Right.
And here's this is a fucking amazing irony is that this same guy, Gerald Boyle, he had prosecuted Milwaukee's very first serial killer case 20 years earlier.
And then he went to work for the defense.
Yeah, and then he worked to get Jeffrey Dahmer back on the streets.
Because he knew what he was good at.
Yeah.
Which was getting those killers back out on the streets.
So what was the sentence?
The sentence was 5 years of probation.
Fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Absolutely. Yeah.
5 years of probation for each count to run concurrently. He was also, he begged and pleaded with a judge to help, let him keep his job. He's like, I need to keep my job so much. Like, I absolutely need to keep it. I'm a hard worker. My job is all I have.
I mean, he was so good at forming the bars with his bare hands.
Yeah. If anybody has had ambrosia chocolate, please let us know. I've never got to sample
any
of it.
Send me a bar of it.
If you grew up in the 80s and you had an ambrosia chocolate, you probably had something touched by Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. He works the big mixer.
Oh, yeah. Of course
that was his job, is that he worked the big mixer on the overnights.
My goodness.
So he was all, yeah, and he was.
Can you trust anyone who works overnights?
No.
My dad was an overnight truck driver.
I had a night job, though.
Yeah. Martin from Human Centipede 2 worked overnight.
Fake character.
Yeah. All right.
So this guy, he was sentenced to a work release program, meaning he had to be at the jail during the day and then go to work at night.
Where's the FDA, by the way?
What do you mean?
Isn't there a Food and Drug Administration be like, you got a jack-off expert over here putting all the chocolate in the goddamn mixer? I think we have a problem.
No, that chocolate, the way chocolate company work, they just go like, la, 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 with their fucking fingers in their ears. They don't want to hear. Because if they had to fire every sex offender that was at the chocolate factory, Easter would be over.
So here's what's fucked up, is that his parole officer was supposed to make twice monthly home visits to Jeffrey Dahmer's home, but because she had so many cases, and because Jeffrey lived in such a terrible neighborhood, she never went to his apartment.
And when you say cases, you're talking about cases of PBR. They're all drunk. I'm telling you, the detective is drunk. Everybody is drunk in Wisconsin.
Yep. So Jeffrey, after being released from prison, he moved back in with his grandmother very briefly and then moved into the infamous apartment 213 on 924 North 25th Street in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, his Graceland.
Yes, it was.
And over the next...
And man, they demolished that entire building.
Oh, it's gone.
Yeah, and they're not even putting anything on top of it, are they?
I don't think
so. No, they leave that. And those things, we were just outside talking to somebody. They were like, just like, I can't believe it, but what about when everybody else upset that was in the apartment building when they were knocked it down? Or was just
no,
being like,
no.
No, I think they were done living at those apartments after they found out what happened.
It was a slum of an apartment, so I think they got better lives out of it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, in fact, this area, it was 69% black. The rents were half that of the nicer neighborhoods of Milwaukee. There were 2,378 people living on Dahmer's block alone. And here's another thing about talking about nothing going on in Milwaukee at that time. Milwaukee was having a record year for homicide.
Oh, yeah. So it was total ape shit. It was the same thing that was going on with the Zodiac killings, where it was like you have these, there's a massive violence happening in an area. It's the perfect place for a serial killer to be operating.
Cops would not go past, it was I forget the street. They would not go past it. It was like on Oakland and whatnot. Yeah, they would just never go down there. But as a delivery driver, a driver for Jimmy John's Subs, I would. Because I believed that everybody needed a wonderful all meat, all cancer causing sandwich.
And that's why we call him Ben, hero of the people Kissel.
That's right. I'm trying to think of the burger's name or the sandwich's name.
The Hunter's Club.
Yes, yeah,
I love Jimmy John's.
Oh, Jimmy John's is good.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have been so happy if I was in that neighborhood and I saw you if I got the sandwich from you, of course.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I think there's one just called Big Tuna. I was just full of tuna.
So Jeffrey,
so sad.
What's happened to you?
I don't know.
You just got all wistful about your Jimmy John's experience.
Well, I was in the neighborhood that Dahmer was you know, hanging out.
So Jeffrey, after being in this work release program for an entire year, no kills whatsoever, he, less than a week in his new apartment, goes and gets his next victim.
Of course, you got a bachelor pad. You got to use it.
Yeah.
Little housewarming gift for himself. Raymond Smith, he was a male prostitute. Dahmer took him back to 219 with the promise of $50 per sex. There was the drinks, 7 sleeping pills, manually strangled. He took, the next day, he went out and bought a Polaroid camera and took, and he posed this guy's body into a lot of different, and this is the first time he started posing the bodies to take pictures
of. Yeah, he said it to show off their physique.
Yeah, you know that famous photo that everyone's seen of the body in the bathtub?
All arched back.
All arched back. This is, that was Raymond Smith.
Yeah.
But of course, that inspired Outkast song, Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture.
That's disgusting.
Very exciting. Andre 3000.
One of the happiest songs ever written.
It was. Shake it.
I can't help but feel that that is not the case.
It might be the case, but you never know.
Maybe if they were from Milwaukee.
Maybe.
But
maybe.
They're from Atlanta, sir.
They're from Atlanta, or in Atlanta is about the hip-hop.
This story spread, though. You never know.
So 1 week after that, Dahmer decides to try his hand again, but this time had a bit of a bugaboo. He accidentally switched the drinks and drank his own drug-laced drink.
No,
and he woke up $300 in a watch lighter.
Now, what I think is interesting about this is that, yes, if this was a sitcom, this would have been a hilarious episode of a sitcom.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's reality, and he's a horrible monster.
Right.
So Dahmer, he meets Eddie Smith, 28, at the Phoenix Bar. He also has a bit of a goof on this one. He just couldn't wait to get to Scully time.
I mean, when you got the altar on your mind, you're like, I need is 7. I need 7. All right, I got 1. This one. Oh, look how big his head is. Yeah, it's going to be so big.
My head would have been on top of that altar.
Lord, yeah.
Oh,
yikes.
Yeah.
You would have been a fucking Werther's bowl.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
So
I wish Dahmer could have been a grandfather.
You want some chocolate? You want some candy?
This was a black prostitute I killed.
Yes.
Now it holds gummies.
So he takes the head and he decides that the best way to get the skull dry is to put it in the oven. When you put a skull in the oven, it explodes.
So was the brain still in the skull or had he scooped it clean?
I think he had scooped it clean. I think this is post-boil.
Do we know what he does with these brains? He just bags them up.
Yeah.
He doesn't eat the brains.
No,
he
brains,
eats the thighs. Well, we'll find out later on. He eats the thighs and the bice.
Yeah, he's not a viscera man whatsoever.
Okay.
He's a all meat. Man, he's a good cuts man. He's not like Henry eating those disgusting organs.
Oh, take it easy.
And it gives you rice, gives you power.
You eat more disgusting than Jeffrey Dahmer.
I don't know. You know,
I do.
Mine are still things raised to be killed. I guess you could say the same about man, the most dangerous game to hunt.
You're just taking that straight from Surviving the Game. That is a line that Gary Busey has.
And you know, Dahmer, he said about this one, he felt rotten about it.
Yeah, because he didn't get any of the cool shit.
Because he didn't get any of the cool shit. But
I see. It wasn't because he murdered a man.
It wasn't because he murdered the man. It was because he wasn't able to get anything from it, which which I think what he was thinking in his mind is that it had gone completely to waste because he always felt remorse.
He hated killing.
He hated killing. He felt remorse after every murder, but he saw it in his fucked up mind. He saw all of it as a means to an end. So if there was no end,
this person died for nothing.
Yeah, this person died for nothing.
He was very Native American about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, you thank the buffalo.
Now, this is also, this next fact right here is, I did not know at all.
I didn't know about this either until I started researching. This guy, he actually called this guy's
sister. Dahmer called Raymond Smith's sister.
Yeah, Dahmer called Raymond Smith's sister, Carolyn, about a year after he was reported missing. Mm-hmm. And she answered the phone, and the guy on the other side of the phone said, "Don't look for your brother." And when she said, "Why?" he just said, "Because I killed him." And Dahmer confessed that he made, not only did he make the call, but he made multiple calls to family members doing this exact same
thing.
That's
very
interesting. BTK got away with it too, just making phone calls in, to
people.
But
what's fucked up in Dahmer's rationale is that he thought he was doing the nice thing.
Yeah.
He thought he was giving them closure.
I guess to some degree he was. If they believed him.
I mean, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not cool.
But you can't do that anymore. You can't have a burner phone and call somebody.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can have a burner phone. Al-Qaeda does it every day. And we can't seem to find them, and they're growing, and they're more dangerous every week. And this war's got to continue until we get every last one of them. Mm-hmm.
True. So victim number 7, his name was Ricky Lee Beeks. He met him at Club 219, and that's a bit of serendipity there that it was Club 219 where he got a lot of his victims, and he lived in apartment 219.
Interesting.
So that could have been a good pickup.
I thought it was 213.
You're right.
But, I mean, everyone was so drunk. It didn't matter. That's the least of all the lies he's going to tell all night.
9 is divisible by 3, my friend.
You're right. I'm wrong.
And Dahmer said at this point, he was on a roll as far as cutting up the bodies. This is a quote from Dahmer saying exactly how he did it. This is what he said. "I separated the joints, the arm joints, the leg joints, and had to do 2 boilings. I think I used 4 boxes of Soilex for each one. Put in the upper portion of the body and boiled that for about 2 hours, and then the lower portion for another 2 hours. The Soilex removes all the flesh, turns it into a jelly-like substance, and it just rinses off. Then I laid the clean bones in a light bleach solution, left them there for a day, and spread them out on either newspaper or cloth, and let them dry for about a week in the bedroom."
And what could this have possibly smelled like?
Like Soilex.
This is just fucking imagine. Unbelievable that he got away with this for so long. It's like, that must have reeked.
I mean, if you're a detective, don't you just go to the stores and be like, "Got any Soilex?" "Oh, you do? Okay. Got any Soilex?" "You do? You got any Soilex?" "No."
Oh, no. All right, tall man in weird spectacles picked up all of it?
All of it. All 30 boxes of Soilex? Okay.
Yeah, but who are these people? Who are the people that live in the apartment? Who are they going to complain to? The cops aren't going to come.
Landlord, they're not going to complain to the cops anyway.
Yeah, they're not going
to. The racism of the Milwaukee Police Department was notorious. They were terrible people.
Did you see fucking that slumlord isn't going to come and check it out.
There was an interview with him briefly in Born to Kill, and he was just like, older guy, and he's just like,
the landlord?
Yeah, and he was just like, "I went up there and I knocked on the door and I was like, Dahmer, you better quit it with that smell, but you know, I never really heard nothing until the arrest came."
That's right. You know what the excuse Jeffrey gave the landlord? That he had some tropical fish that died.
Oh, yes. Yes. Ugh.
So there is one kid. Before the last victim, there was one boy who did get away from Jeffrey Dahmer.
And this story, this is truly a sad story. And again, a testament to how racist and ridiculously stupid.
No. This isn't the big one.
No. Because this kid actually got away.
Okay.
No, Jeffrey, he picked up a 15-year-old boy outside of Phoenix Bar, gave him $200 to pose in nude photographs.
$19 an hour at the chocolate factory starting to kick in.
That's right.
The boy went, but would refuse to drink anything that Dahmer gave him. This kid in it for the money. I'll get $200. This perv weirdo will take some pictures of me. I'm out of here.
Sure.
He said that the VCR was playing The Exorcist.
Cool.
While the boy was laying
on the
bed.
It's like my house, but without all the murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and Dahmer came up behind him and hit him with a rubber mallet and tried to strangle him.
You go to sleep. You go to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, did he throw a black circle against the wall and make him try to run through it, too? I mean, is he Wile E. Coyote trying to get a roadrunner?
He got a giant rubber band. He attached it to two things and slingshotted his way into the other room.
Oh, my God. So he tried strangling him. The boy was able to get loose, and Dahmer started bargaining with the kid. The kid said, like, all right, like, I won't call the cops if you just let me go. All right, just let me go. And Dahmer, I think at this point, realized that he wasn't going to get away with his regular strangling them in their sleep. If he was going to kill this person, he was going to have to kill them with their eyes open, screaming, struggling. Mm-hmm.
And couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it. He absolutely. So he let the kid go.
Different than Bundy, who needed that.
Yeah. Yo, yeah, most people. Again, he's a product killer, not a process killer.
So Jeff calls a taxi for him.
That says, before Uber, things were different.
This is nice. This was a nice move.
When the kid got back to his house, I mean, it was, of course, he was in a foster home. He didn't tell his mother.
Of course he was in a foster
home. Yeah.
I guess it's true.
Yeah, I mean, he's fucking cruising outside of a gay bar in Milwaukee at 14.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not doing good.
There's just not a lot of parenting going on in Wisconsin.
So he went back to his father, Senator Koch's house, and told his dad all about it.
And he didn't really tell his foster mom what happened because she didn't know he was gay and he didn't want to tell her. But eventually she pressed him. They went to their social worker. The social worker promised to contact the police. The police went to the house, knocked on the door. Jeffrey wasn't there, and the cops never went back.
Yep.
Again. Again.
And nobody smelled the smell.
They never heard from the police. They never heard from the social worker.
It plays into the cops' races. Oh, you know those people. It's like a zoo. It's like a zoo in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really, it's the perfect hiding place for a bunch of corpses is a black apartment building in Milwaukee.
Yo, yeah.
Yeah. So the next guy, Ernest Miller, 25, the first and only time that Jeffrey would use a knife on the victim while he was still alive, he cut this guy's throat. He said he didn't like it because he said it was too messy and caused too much pain.
It's messy. Well, it's true. It's because, he just didn't like it. It drove him nuts. You know that in between killings, he was literally just sitting, rocking himself to sleep all night, like just getting power hammered so that he could even go to sleep in his fucking world of mayhem that he was living in now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one, Henry, the scenario that you brought up earlier, this is when it actually comes to fruition. And after he killed this guy, he put the body in the bathtub, started to dismember him, cut off the head, and then while he was dismembering him, he repeatedly kissed and talked to the dismembered head.
Hey, you know, hey, so tell me, I hear, hey, so you want to hear a joke there? And he's like, what are you? And he's like, all right. And when one muffin said to the other muffin in the oven, what did he say? He's like, it's too hot in here. What did the other muffin say to him? Oh, what did he say? She's like, oh, no, we're talking to muffin.
Yep.
fuck, I'm fucking your mouth. I'm fucking your fucking mouth. I'm fucking your fucking mouth, Ed.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you call cheese that's not yours, eh? Oh, nacho cheese.
Yeah, no, fuck in your mouth. I got a fuck in your mouth.
Well, speaking of, and of course, Dahmer, he completely dismembered it. He stripped the body of all the flesh. He hung the photograph. He hung the skeleton in the shower and photographed it. And now I think it's time to hear a little bit about what Jeffrey did in the shower.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is when things started to get weird.
Yeah.
He would come back from work and make love with the dead body. He would sleep with it. He would lie with it. He would rub it and have sex with it.
He was just very, very enamored with the concept of opening a body, seeing the internal organs spill forth, and several of the bodies he would put in his bathtub and pack with ice in midweek because he had to work the next day so he could keep them for the weekend, where he had more time to enjoy himself with these bodies. He said to do that, he'd have to shower with cold water so he wouldn't melt the ice. It was uncomfortable. It was well worth it.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
God damn.
What are you going to do this weekend, Bob?
I'm going to have a couple of cold ones.
Oh, all right, Jeff.
I just cracked myself up. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Yeah, I was going to go on my yacht with the kids.
I hope y'all don't burn the caramels.
Okay.
Well, more important than anything else out of this kill is that this is his first cannibalism kill.
Here we go.
As they say, this is when the cannibalism started.
And then what I really find interesting about this whole process is like no other serial crime investigation can you see the actual steps of escalation so clearly.
Yeah. So clearly.
Each kill, he amped it up a little bit for himself, mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more deviant. It's just trying to scratch that itch. He can't figure out how to please himself. One detective said it was like he was searching for the ultimate orgasm.
Yeah.
But it's also almost like a relationship to some degree. You know, you don't have sex with the gal that you love for the first time in the ways that you're going to be having sex with her 10 years down the road when everyone gets each other's fetishes and things. I mean, this is like an actual...
Yeah, sometimes you got to kill her.
Well, no, I mean...
Sometimes you just got to kill her.
I mean, he
started with that.
He's with a high level, so I mean, then you got to start eating them, you know.
So victim number 9 was his only non-sexual kill.
David Thomas was just too ugly.
Yeah.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, he took him back to the apartment, and the only reason why he killed him was because he was afraid that David would be angry with him.
Well, I bet he's angry up in heaven right now, being like, I wish we would have gotten brunch instead, Jeff.
Yep.
Well, and then after this, Jeffrey goes through what we call a bit of a dry spell.
Well, I think after that, I think that when he killed him, I think we see that in this, is that he took him home, he was like, he's like, this isn't even what I want anymore.
Right. I thought I knew what I wanted.
You know what? I should take a little break. Mm-hmm. And then come after this with a new passion. New passion. Take a vacation.
I mean, there is absolute evidence to suggest that Jeffrey Dahmer's bipolar.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
when you talk, and by the way, the entire time that he is killing all these people, he's meeting with his probation officer every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Meeting probation officer. This man had all of it. Everything that was bad, everything that could be bad in a person, he got all of it. He is by far, I mean, like, of course, there are many others that are different, but I find that Jeffrey Dahmer is probably the most mentally ill.
Yeah.
Just in terms of, like, I honestly think you could have just drugged him up and kept him in a state hospital if you had found him really early and had just kept him from all this.
Yeah.
Where certain other people were kind of like, you know, like Ted Bundy was like a fucking cougar.
Yeah.
You know, like, are very dangerous. Jeffrey Dahmer was just very fucked up.
Let's end at the beginning.
Oh.
19-year-old Errol Lindsay was walking home to get a key cut one day. Lindsay was a heterosexual, but Jeffrey was able to lure him to the apartment.
This is when, this is when he became a bit of a mixologist.
This is when he became a bit of a mixologist. Errol Lindsay was Jeffrey Dahmer's very first love zombie.
Right. Now, my question with this is, how did he even get the idea? Does anyone... I've been looking for it and looking for it.
No, he liked horror movies. He probably just watched Romero's Day of the Dead. And
his father was a chemist, remember?
Yes. So this grisly detail that's involved in this is very important, and then we can talk about it.
Yeah. So he came into the apartment. He was drugged, mm-hmm. and Jeffrey drilled a hole into his skull and poured muriatic acid.
No, he said what he had was he had a hand drill from when he was doing some stuff in his house. And he said, he's just like, when I was listening to him talk about it, he's like, yeah, I figured I could do it real quick and get the hole in there. And then I poured the acid in there. And, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, it just... didn't work how I wanted it to work.
No, it didn't, Tom.
No. And so Lindsay was somehow still alive. And he woke up.
Yeah.
And basically, because he hoped that he'd pour this acid in his fucking brain and it would mush him up and make him a zombie.
Right.
But he woke up and said, I have a headache. What time is it? And then he drugged him again.
Right.
And then strangled him.
It's bone fucking time.
Well, now you're a lamp.
Yeah. Nah.
Well, there's one more victim to get to. His name's Tony Hughes. He was victim 12. I mean, everyone was complaining about the smell. They said that they heard a sound of a chainsaw every once in a while. I mean,
it's just American Psycho, Bateman style
stuff. He's playing The Exorcist on loop. Yeah. He's playing Working for the Weekend on loop, probably at the same time, because it was the song of that summer.
Definitely.
You know, like, he's all up on it. He keeps asking people if they want to see Caddyshack too.
What did
you know, but he's just talking to people's dogs.
I mean, what's so amazing is these black people must have just been like, white people, huh? We got one white guy in this whole building. I guess this is what they do.
This is how you get left alone in the ghetto.
Yeah. And what Jeffrey said about the smell, about the way he was disposing of the bodies, the lackadaisical way that he was going about everything, he just said, nobody ever said anything, so I kept doing it.
He was so... It's just, again, if you're breaking the law, pretend that you're not. And then you can get away with it.
Eddie taught me that. Ed Larson taught me that, where you just be like, what? What are you talking about?
There's
like,
that
anytime
scene,
anybody accuses you of anything.
There's that scene in Blow, the Johnny Depp, where he stars, Johnny Depp stars in that movie Blow. It's like when you're carrying like 10 pounds of cocaine across the border, you pretend like you're not carrying 10 pounds across the border, you just walk across the damn border.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, yeah, no, he was a cool customer when it came to this, and that was a part of it. He's just, we see the compartmentalizing of his personality, his apartment, because that's what they said. There's this one quote that I find really interesting about him, which was, they said that when he went back to his place, this quote about him is chilling. The quote about him, about this, is you see the he goes into his apartment. Dahmer once said that once he had snapped the lock on the door and the person was in his apartment, he'd become more aggressive, more powerful. It was almost like a psychological transformation. He would become more sexually aroused. So it's like he's built this perfect sex dungeon.
Yeah.
And he's totally in charge of.
And it wasn't just one snap on the one lock on the door. I mean, he had like seven locks on this door. I mean, Houdini couldn't have gotten out of this place.
Yeah.
It was pretty nice. One deadbolt. That's what you need. One apartment door equals one deadbolt.
Unless you're carrying gold bars.
Yeah.
Like, you need one deadbolt.
Yeah. It was guarded like an armored truck.
So do we have to end here?
Yeah, we have to end here. We'll be back next week.
We're going to pump through the end of this to get to... There's just so much stuff.
There's so much. Yeah,
he deserves a lot of attention.
He does.
This is the perfect example of losing yourself to your fantasies.
Yep.
And again, I wanted to say this in the first episode, because of what happened. This is kind of hammy and kind of a thing, but it's like, truly is. It's like, if you ever feel like you are having bad thoughts,
yes,
tell somebody. Like, this is could have been, he could have been reached out to. There were things that could have happened. The things when he was left alone for that period of time when he first got obsessed with that jogger and that stuff, like, that was the time that maybe someone could have helped him, but he was fucked from then on out. So tell somebody.
Yeah, just talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Write to us at cavecomedyradio@gmail.com. We'll answer it all on Sex and Other Human Activity.
Save it for the Grimm podcast. Yeah.
Sometimes tell yourself no.
Tell yourself. Know? Give yourself
just saying,
boundaries.
I'm not going to do it. That's why women are so nice in relationships, because they often say no, and then you say, oh, okay, I can't do that.
So we'll be back next week. We'll start with The Great Escape, and we'll finish out Jeffrey Dahmer with the final kills, the capture, the confession, the trial, and the murder.
And then his own grisly death.
His own very grisly
death. Oh, my goodness. Jesus, so hail Christ. Satan, everybody. And you know what? I want to say, too, if you're a Christian listener out there, that's fine. Thank you
Thank you for
Satan's
listening.
Very
thank
important
you.
Of course, to the Bible.
Yes, Satan loves your treachery.
Sure. He loves everything about it. You can't have one without the other.
Also, yes, and thank everybody for the birthday messages.
Yeah.
I loved all the burgers. That was very awesome.
Yeah.
I felt powerful. I thank
you
follow,
felt powerful.
I felt
the...
fucking powerful.
Okay, that's a strange thing
Nine
to feel.
9 feet tall.
Right.
And thank you to everybody who donated to the Murderfist Kickstarter to help our pilot. That was amazing.
Nice.
I'm going to post it up again at some point. Thank you so much to people who've already donated.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
That's right. And keep on supporting Cave Comedy Radio, Roundtable, Top Hat, Sex and Other Human Activities, Page 7, all these things. All right, everybody. Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail me.
And, of course, hail yourselves.
Thank you.